This week's podcast on her voice, Ladies Who Write, Kimberly Crenshaw. Modern feminist discourse centers around the wage gap, the Me Too movement, and women's objectification, specifically in the media. When I hear the wage gap, I think of 79 cents to a dollar. When I hear the Me Too movement, I think of Hollywood actresses reporting their abuse. And when I hear the objectification of women, I think of the reclamation of sexuality and sex work away from the male gaze, taking on a personal sense of empowerment. These issues are big talking points of contemporary feminist thinking, as they are meant to address and resolve oppression, violence, and hatred women experience daily. But while these provide an outlet for women to relate, for the most part, they restrict feminist discourse solely to the experience of women that are otherwise privileged. A significant portion of feminist discourse expresses the experience of rich white women at the expense of women of color, specifically Black women. To make matters worse, much of mainstream feminism has taken from Black feminists and been appropriated to be digestible to the mainstream experience of white women, effectively whitewashing feminist discourse. For example, 79 cents to a dollar is what white women make compared to white men. But disregarded from mainstream wage gap discourse, Black women are only paid 62 cents to the white man's dollar. This is 21% lower than what white women make. The Me Too movement started with Tanara Burke, a Black woman, yet this movement was only established as mainstream when taken to the Oscars. And the Oscars are an institution criticized for being racist year after year. Emma Watson and other white famous rich women became the face of the movement, not Tanara Burke. Discourse on the objectification of femininity in the media centers on whiteness as well. White women are marginalized in the media through objectification and commodification of the female body. In contrast, Black women are restricted from any meaningful role in the media, especially feminine roles, as societal understandings of femininity do not account for Black women. While these three topics of contemporary feminism are essential to address, we need to be genuinely concerned about what is being addressed and the way things are handled in mainstream feminism. Black women and women of color continue to be alienated from the feminist movement. At the same time, notable women of color contributing to feminism continue to provide the most radical and revolutionary theories. Without analyzing the feminine experience beyond that of white women, feminism cannot accurately challenge the patriarchy, colonialism, racism, homophobia, and all other forms of bigotry. This is because all these forms of discrimination converge together for the people affected. Without uplifting disabled trans women of color, we are leaving women behind. Feminism that leaves women behind, and people in general behind, is counterproductive. It only serves to expand privilege to other groups instead of tearing down the system that has caused so many groups oppression. This is the only way to progress rather than assimilate to societal understandings of gender, race, and sexuality. The centrality of whiteness in feminism tarnishes the ideology and alienates women of color from discourse on sex discrimination. From Sojourner Truth's Ain't I a Woman to Maya Angelou's I Rise, the experiences of Black women have been excluded from mainstream feminist tradition, creating a continuation of marginalization. In 1979, Alice Walker, a notable feminist thinker, coined the term and theory of womanism. This is a branch of feminism that denotes the specific experiences of Black women. In the late 20th century, there was a surge of Black feminist thinking in the mainstream. The civil rights movement and second wave feminism converged for these women. They were excluded from both movements, forced to choose between their Blackness and their femaleness, as they were considered to be mutually exclusive categories. This set the stage for Kimberly Crenshaw to revolutionize feminism and social justice as a whole with her theory of intersectionality. Part 2, How Kimberly Crenshaw Revolutionized Feminist Theory. Crenshaw is a lawyer, a writer, and a distinguished professor at Columbia Law School and the University of California. Her work focuses on critical race theory, the civil rights movement, feminism, which all converge into a focus on Black feminist legal theory. She has written many books on the subject. What I will be focusing on is one article on the legal system and intersectionality entitled Demarginalizing the Intersection of Race and Sex, a Black Feminist Critique of Anti-Discrimination Doctrine, Feminist Theory, and Anti-Racist Politics. And in addition to that, I will be pulling from her short book titled Mapping the Margins, Intersectionality, Identity Politics, Violence Against Women of Color. Both of these works focus on intersectionality and how the legal system harms women of color due to the lack of intersectional understanding of social inequalities by centering whiteness. I believe that intersectionality is the most revolutionary theory in feminism and any social justice movement in general. In her words, Crenshaw describes the purpose of intersectionality as a provisional concept linking contemporary politics with postmodern theory. In Mapping the Intersections of Race and Gender, the concept does engage dominant assumptions that race and gender are essentially separate categories. By tracing the categories to their intersections, I hope to suggest a methodology that will ultimately disrupt the tendencies to see race and gender as exclusive or separable. While the primary intersections that I explore here are between race and gender, the concept can and should be expanded by factoring in issues such as class, sexual orientation, age, and color. This is so revolutionary because it provides a basis to understand oppression not as a single axis of systemic disadvantage, but as a multifaceted framework to address converging identity. This theory includes Black women in terms of their Blackness and their womanhood, in discourse frequently dominated by their white female and Black male counterparts. This is so vital since both feminist and anti-racist politics have often help to marginalize the issue of violence against women of color. Crenshaw is a lawyer, so the majority of her work focuses on oppression within the legal system. She critiques the courts because discrimination lawsuits center around privileged labels and groups, excluding one axis of oppression. In terms of gender inequality, white women's experience can be structurally understood by the law by the centrality of whiteness. The centrality of these privileged labels, whether it be white, man, straight, etc., makes it structurally impossible to bring the issues of Black women to light, let alone be remedied in a court of law. An intersectional analysis shows us how prevalent race and sex issues are as they are flooding into movements meant to be uplifting to marginalized people. Part 3, Crenshaw's addition to the tradition of feminist thought. In her book, Mapping the Margins, Crenshaw examines and explains structural identity, political intersectionality, and representative intersectionality. First, structural identity is defined as, quote, a consequence of gender and class oppression, which are then compounded by the radically discriminatory employment and housing practices women of color often face. This term is used to explain political identity as a creation and how intersectional subordination affects these social identities. Simultaneously, Crenshaw notes, while those with more subordinating labels in their structural identity are not provided for. Using the example of immigrant women of color, stating that, quote, these women have remained vulnerable to battering because they are unable to meet the conditions established for a waiver. She also explains that there are cultural and language barriers that make it impossible for immigrant women of color to access support and services, unlike their white counterparts that have no language barrier or they don't have to worry about their status as legal immigrants to get that waiver. The inability to access support services shows the centrality of whiteness in the legal discourse of feminism, as there's really only the assumption that it's white women and a specific feminine approach, not all structural identities converging. Structural identity is frequently unaddressed when there is more than one area of oppression involved, which causes considerable issues in discourse and social movements, as mentioned in the above example of domestic abuse and immigration status. The need of the most marginalized are constantly unaddressed. With this understanding of structural identity, Crenshaw examines political intersectionality, focusing on feminist and anti-racist analyses of rape and domestic violence. Both do not address the victimization of Black women in these circumstances. Crenshaw examines feminist understandings of domestic violence, pointing out that movements use personal inflections that tend to other women of color and poor women. This creates a paradigm where domestic violence is understood as a household-specific issue because of taglines like, quote, "I never thought it could be me." These taglines imply that there is a type of household where domestic abuse is prominent, poor marginalized families. This harms women of less privilege because such personal taglines portray violence against women as expected in particular structural identities, which is heavily rooted in the racism relaying on the demonization of Black men and men of color and the erasure of Black women and women of color's victimization. This analysis ties a common thread in intersectional theory, examining the difference between sexism white women experience, which provides a certain amount of protection by demonizing men of color and devaluing women of color. Taglines like these do not acknowledge the harm of marginalized women and prioritize rich white women's experience, making it impossible for poor women of color to be included in this discourse. Crenshaw's theorization can be seen in the real world, like in the case of the hashtag MeToo movement. Hollywood actresses, predominantly white actresses, were stepping out with personal inflections about their stories on sexual violence. The world was shocked because these women are perceived as untouchable by the rest of society, mirroring the "I never thought it could be me" tagline. Making matters worse, the Me Too movement was started by a Black woman, Tanara Burke, with a very different structural identity to that of a white Hollywood actress. And these white Hollywood actresses cannot address the structural identity and the abuse a Black woman like Tanara Burke could understand. The inability for women of color to voice their stories results from a discourse that only listens to the accounts of upper-class women. On the other hand, anti-racism offers no place for Black women's issues to be heard either. In marginalized communities, there is a genuine fear that violence against women is a, quote, "migration of white women's concern into a context in which they are not only irrelevant, but also harmful to the Black community." There is an understanding of sexual violence being, for the most part, a Black male predator and a white female victim. This trope can be seen throughout history, even in books like To Kill a Mockingbird. This stereotype is pervasive. The raced perception of sexual violence has caused sexual violence against women to be policed in racist and anti-racist discourse. Crenshaw states, "People of color must often weigh their interests in avoiding issues that might reinforce distorted public perceptions against the need to acknowledge and address intercommunity problems. Yet, the cost of suppression is seldom recognized, in part because the failure to discuss the issue shapes perceptions of how serious the problem is in the first place." The politicalization and the perception of Black men as perpetrators of sexual violence against white women makes it a taboo and racially charged area of discussion. But more harmful than that, the preoccupation with the structural identities of people offended by one mode of oppression, in this case Black men and white women, silences Black women's experience. Crenshaw goes on, "Continual emphasis on Black male sexuality at the core in anti-racist critique of rape, Black women who raise claims of rape against Black men are not only disregarded, but also sometimes vilified within the African American community." Crenshaw notes that there is a hierarchy of female bodies, which is represented in the legal subtext of rape trials, as, quote, "The average prison term for a man convinced of raping a Black woman is 2 years, compared to 5 years for the rape of a Latina woman and 10 years for the rape of an Anglo woman." Here we can see that there is a devaluation of Black women, and it is so pervasive. Although, quote, the rhetoric of both agendas formally include Black women, racism is generally not problematized in feminism, and sexism is not problematized in racist discourse. Crenshaw concludes her analysis of sexual violence and racism and sexism by stating that both are exclusionary discourses that, quote, will do little to address the experience of Black and other non-white women until the ramifications of racial stratification among women are acknowledged. At the same time, the anti-racist agenda will not be furthered by suppressing the reality of interracial violence against women of color. Crenshaw's criticism of both anti-racist and feminist rhetoric provides the only route forward to equality. Without it, oppression of Black men and white women will continue and enforce each other's oppression, specifically the oppression of Black women. Crenshaw explains representational intersectionality in a way in which hierarchies of race and gender are established. The theory in this case is that the devaluation of Black women is caused by cultural imagery that does not address intersectional concerns. An intersectional analysis argues that racial and sexual subordination are mutually reinforcing, that Black women are commonly marginalized by a politics of race alone or gender alone, and that political response to each form of subordination must exist at the same time. Moving on to part four, Crenshaw's criticisms of the legal system. Moving on to another notable publishment of Crenshaw's, Demarginalizing the Intersection of Race and Sex, a Black Feminist Critique of Anti-Discrimination Doctrine, Feminist Theory, and Anti-Racist Politics. This reading provides criticism of Western concepts and politics and legal theory, as she uses four court cases to examine how discrimination law fails to address the issues of groups that are affected by more than one mode of oppression. In one court case, Moore versus Hughes, Helicopter Inc., Black women took their employer to court, stating discrimination against them not as women or people of color, but as Black women. Crenshaw writes on this case, quote, Black females' claims are seen as hybrid, but they sometimes cannot represent those who have pure claims of sex discrimination. This court case clearly centers on whiteness, as women were dismissed from the court because their experience did not align with that of white women. The preoccupation with the experiences of white women exists because expanding certain patriarchal privileges to white women does not challenge the lives of the privileged groups by challenging the system as a whole. In Crenshaw's words, quote, there is no more to gain by collectively changing the hierarchy rather than each discriminatee individual seeking to protect her source of privilege within the hierarchy. The other court cases follow the same vein as Moore versus Hughes Helicopter Inc., providing examples of issues pertaining to Black women who have been unable to address their structural identity, like singularly oppressed groups that are able to express their oppression within the court system, like white women and like Black men. Part 5, Crenshaw's Impact and the Future of Feminism. Crenshaw is so vital to feminist tradition because she challenges harmful theories that exclude women of color. She provides the only way to understand how to change the world and promote equality between all men and women. She challenges the legal system's inability to account for many identities coming together, creating oppression that includes all these labels at the same time, not just the singular label of woman, gay, Black, an exception to their privileged labels. Many feminist thinkers have tried to assimilate to manliness or masculinity, which excludes how women of color are perceived under not only the patriarchy, but colonialism and racism. Crenshaw challenges the entire system rather than incorporating singularly oppressed groups to the patriarchy, as it's not possible for women of color to assimilate. Crenshaw's theory of intersectionality does not only provide a path forward for the inclusion of women of color, it's far more radical, as she broadens intersectionality to include any structural identity of disabled, queer, and other identities that continue to be excluded from feminist thought.